My presentation today is mostly about realizing the potential of adolescents. You know, adolescents don't get good press. There's such potential there. So, you know, sharing the program, but I want to do it through the eyes of, you know, what they can do for us and our world. I began my Montessori experience 35 years ago and 3 to 6, and actually added a level as my own children grew up. And when my daughters were ready for middle school, I thought, oh, yeah, they're ready to go off, you know, and do that. And what we found was there was nothing suitable out there. And the way they treated adolescents actually was the part. Not, there wasn't anything about the academics. It was the way they treated adolescents. So I thought, well, even if she sat at School of the Woods for the next couple of years and read books, that would be good enough. You know, because academically, both my daughters do well. So we decided to start the program. And it was trial and error, using Montessori philosophy and adolescent psychology and looking at current trends and issues in education. I call it a very dynamic process. We see how things work and get the feedback. So it's now been going on for 23 years. And what I do is I go and visit my interns all over the world once a week. And so once a week I get feedback, like a research project, and we know by the, you know, the next summer what, you know, what worked, what didn't work, what works everywhere, what works in small environments, what works in large environments. And it's exciting to watch and to see how all of that grows. So this is sort of the story that we have. Realizing the potential of the adolescent and creating optimal environments that transform our world one adolescent at a time. My dear young people, I see the light in your eyes, the energy in your bodies, and the hope that is in your spirit. I know that it is you, not I, who will make the future. It is you, not I, who will fix our wrongs and carry forward all that is right in the world. Nelson Mandela. What we know is this is a very pivotal time. We know from the new brain research that's going on, there's actually a rewiring of the brain. There's an overproduction of cells, and they have to prune themselves. And so those areas in which get used at this time will continue, and those areas that don't get used will prune away. So for many, many years, we really didn't think about this being an important time. It was kind of like waiting to be in high school, and there wasn't any really focus for the early adolescent. And now we're finding it actually is a very, very crucial time, and the experience that adolescents have at this time really can determine their life and future. In fact, a lot of people now think that this is actually a second chance, because we used to think it was only in early childhood that everything, that the brain was sort of finished, and it's not. And so if children have had negative experiences early on, that we can actually make a change at this point in time. They're, of course, looking for, and searching for their identity. They're experimenting with independence and exploring their values. In fact, they say in Carnegie Report this is a turning point, and that most life's major decisions are made between the ages of 12 and 14. Doesn't mean they act on it, but the path in which they're going to take is determined at this particular time. So it's a crucial time for us to provide the best environment for them to take the appropriate path. There's a lot of self-construction going on, and Montessori talks about this is the time for self-construction. Okay? Now we see her words even matching the new brain research. It's only 2 or 3 years old. They have the emergence into culture, knowing what their culture is. And this has been an especially interesting experience for me because I have schools in Canada and New Zealand and Chile and in Monterey, and watching what's different from the different cultures of adolescent. Pretty much all the way through elementary, there isn't a significant difference other than practical life and those things. But here it does make a difference. In fact, I also have a school that I work with in Saudi Arabia. We haven't gotten up to the adolescent part, but that will be even a bigger, interesting experience, and it may not match. And so really I've told them, if, you know, I won't compromise on the philosophy, and so we'll, so far they've made the changes that I've asked, but when it comes to gender differences and equality and those things, independence, I don't know how that will work. They have energy, creativity, enthusiasm to change societal's negative patterns. We need a new way of educating. Okay? Not better, but different. Okay? All we keep doing is putting on band-aids, trying to make education better. But we need to look at it from a whole different perspective. Middle school education, ASCD, which is the National Middle School Association, or it says middle-level education are particularly a critical position because of the opportunity that they have to influence, for better or worse, not only the students themselves, but society at large. The future of a society hangs in the balance. So, the adolescent program looks at Montessori philosophy, and I'll give some examples of how that comes in. Adolescent psychology, of course, the whole core of Montessori education is that we look at the child. So we look at the adolescent and then respond. And we prepare the environment, we prepare the adults, and then we focus on a sustainable, meaningful, just future for all. Montessori says education cannot be dismissed as an insignificant factor in the people's lives, as a means of furnishing a few rudiments of culture to young people. It must be viewed, first of all, from the perspective of the development of human values in the individual, in particular his or her moral values, and second, from the point of view of organizing the individual possessors of these enhanced values into a society consciously aware of its destiny. So, we know that it's important. We know that our future is hinging on that. So, let's look at the adolescent and what we need to do. First of all, we know that early adolescents have a lot of physical growth. Actually, the second most important time in their life on physical, the physical growth. Their feet and their hands grow first, then their limbs, and finally their trunk. That's why they have huge feet, that they're falling over each other and themselves. They have a hard time maneuvering through crowded spaces, and the rest of their body hasn't caught up with them yet. This is why I say middle school spaces should not be crowded, okay? That they should be open. They have new unrefined strengths, and what that means is that they don't know their strengths anymore. And this gets them in a lot of trouble. Even the stories of the, you know, people breaking windows, and, you know, I always say if you're going to buy anything for a middle school classroom, it better be heavy duty, or you won't last. Even the hole punchers better be heavy duty, you know. The tables need to do. And it's not because they are careless. They get a bad rap. Well, why don't you take care? Or why'd you throw that ball so hard to that child? You know? It's because they have this strength. They don't know what it is yet. They haven't learned to refine it. So they do have to take responsibility when they break things, but it shouldn't be viewed as careless or not caring. I remember one of my very first experiences as we had card tables that we brought in for our classroom every morning, and over the whole leg of a card table would be in somebody's hand and they'd just kind of look at it as surprised as the rest of us, you know. And, you know, I was standing right there. They were not being careful. They were just, you know, took the whole thing off. There's a wide variation of growth in all domains, being cognitive, physical, psychosocial, and moral. They say in any group of 13-year-olds, there's 8 developmental years difference. That's a huge range in the different combinations of those different areas. So this is an age that wants to be normal, and of course nothing is normal. And so they kind of struggle through that. They have fluctuation in metabolism, and I call that the roller coaster ride. What we know is that that ride, you know, sometimes there's highs and lows. Now, the important part of that is that the adults don't need to get on the roller coaster ride. Okay? And they're very cunning, and they can get you on the ride with them. And you will, you know, have the same highs and lows. That doesn't support them. They need somebody who's stable at the side who will support them. And I also find that when adults get on the ride, they don't get off as fast as they So, you know, that lesson is finished with that issue, and the adult is still hanging on. I mean, it sounds funny, but it really is hard to distance yourself with that. They have a new way of thinking, which we call formal thinking or emergent formal thinking. And the brain is ready for formal thinking at age 12. However, only about a third to a half, depending on the research, of college freshmen are formal thinkers. So the potentiality is there, but the environment has to offer opportunities for the student to grow there. That means that you can't have a curriculum that's just right and wrong or black and white. One answer on a Scantron test. Okay? There has to be dialogue. It has to show the grayness, the possibilities. And our future is not going to be in a right or wrong anyway. We have to be very creative of that grayness in between. And so the whole program has many, many different ways of offering that multiple points of view. They're egocentric. No surprise. But that can be a very good thing. You know, we consider that, you know, when they're only thinking about themselves to be negative. But it could be very positive because they're seeking to find out who they are. You know, they love those inventories. They love those things that give them information about themselves. So it's a perfect time to use it and then give them experiences to move away. But it's not, it's perfect. We don't want to take it away. We want to use it in its most positive way. They can understand multiple points of view, but you have to give the opportunities. This can be, for instance, when you have a literature discussion or a Socratic dialogue. You know, when they finally say, you know, my point of view is, I'm thinking, yes, I made it. Because they recognize the fact that there could be somebody else's point of view. And that's the part that you want to start hearing them talk about. They're exploring new interests. This is the time when I feel strongly that they need electives, choices, short-term courses where they're trying things out. So, for instance, you know, doing 8 weeks of photography or 8 weeks of music appreciation or 8 weeks of guitar, okay, to find out what they want. And a lot of parents of adolescents are very frustrated because they sign them up to, you know, to play piano for the year and then they want to quit. You know, and what it is they don't know what they like anymore. All those are new things. So if you have short-term courses, and I even tell parents, you know, say 3 months. You have to do the piano for 3 months, and then we'll reevaluate it. You know, and you might want to try another instrument or something else. But they need to do the 3 months. They need to meet that commitment. But then you need to look at it and see if they should continue another 3 months or if they should try something else. So we have, in our middle school, we have short-term courses. In our high school, we actually have semester courses because soon they find where their passions are, and then the courses are much longer. This is one of my favorite pictures. This is three seventh grade boys who are 1 week apart in age. So this is just the physical difference in a group, actually best friends, but the same variation is in many of the other domains as well. Also, they can truly reflect. The frontal lobes are developed so they can do what we call megacognition, which is think about their thinking. So we have a lot of ways in which they can reflect. What worked? What didn't work? How did you feel? What did you learn? Whether you did a collaborative game or whether you did a simulation game or whether you're reflecting on your cycle of work. So coming back and saying, you know, how does that work? We also offer lots of everyday personal reflection time because our society really doesn't model sitting still and listening to your inner voice. And actually, for middle school kids, they also need a nap sometimes because they're very much like toddlers. So, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of what we call a power nap also is very beneficial for the rest of the day to go well. They can now start planning ahead. So what we do with our students in the middle school is to give their work for 5-week cycles. And they get it all up front, and they have to learn how to pace the work. Now, that doesn't mean we say, here's your work and figure it out. Okay? We give them frameworks to help them learn to pace their work, to get it, spread it out, so that at the end of the 5 weeks, the work is done. In the high school, we do it by quarters. So the quarter, which is 9 weeks. And those are chosen not because it's convenient with the education system, but because that's where cause and effect can be determined. So we want them to understand that what they do at the beginning of a cycle has some relationship to the end of the cycle, because each of those cycles and those quarters are three-period lessons, one big three-period lesson. So there's got to be a relationship, and the time frame has to match what they cognitively can do. This is a term, pseudo-stupidity, and that's a name David Elkind gives as one of the characteristics. And that means that at the younger levels, they have sort of blinders on, and these are, you can make your choices based on what you see. But at this age, the blinders come off, and the whole world becomes a choice. So if there's so many choices, you don't know how to make a choice, and you get overwhelmed. And they kind of dig themselves in a hole if they get overwhelmed, you know, get too far behind in work or whatever it is. You know, we have frameworks that we give so they can make a decision, you know, that they have a systematic way of figuring out. I mean, they don't even know what color socks to wear, you know. And how many times do they change before they leave the house in the morning? You know, because it's that part of, you know, there's too many choices. And, of course, our young people today have too many things. So those choices are even more and more pronounced. Another term that David Elkind uses is imaginary audience. That means they think they're always on stage and everybody is looking at them. So that when they walk into the classroom and they drop their books, they think everybody's focused on what they just did, you know. Or if they have a zit on their face, then, you know, everybody sees that zit. Of course, I think the funny thing is that everybody's in that imaginary audience, so nobody's seen what anybody else has done. So even though they feel like they're on stage, everybody's feeling that kind of way, and so is not as much as noticed as they seem to think. But it takes a lot of emotional energy. They're children 1 minute and adults the other. We watch our students. They're very sophisticated. They can plan things. They do all of these things. And the next minute, they're acting like, you know, early childhood children. That is okay. I mean, we have really felt that vacillating back and forth is very healthy, and we don't want them to have to be sophisticated before they're ready. Our world already asks so much. So when they want to be children, it's okay. And one of the examples is we have in our middle school a dance. We take dance lessons, and then we have a dance. But they can't sustain a whole evening of being, you know, that kind of behavior, I guess. They're all dressed up. I mean, they look like, you know, they're 20 years old, but they can't always sustain that kind of energy. So, you know, we always have other activities they can do in between the dancing. Even in high school a little bit, certainly not as much, but even somewhat there. They're idealists, so that means they want everything to be perfect, and that's when parents are not perfect anymore. Mm-hmm. Oh, the way you cough, mother, that's really embarrassing. You know, of course, you cough that way all the time, but all of a sudden it's, you know, and much more embarrassing, or, you know, drop me off, don't come into the classroom. That kind of thing. So they get over it, but they're looking for that perfection. And then I guess they get over it. You know, the expectations become more realistic. They're interested in big ideas and questions. That means that they don't like all the detail work. And a lot of curriculum is very detailed oriented. They want to discuss large philosophical issues. They don't want the answers. Now, adults want to give them the answers in many cases, but it's not the answer. They just want the opportunity to dialogue. So we have a lot of Socratic dialogue. No right or wrong, just exploring different ideas and big things. They really care about the world. They really work through some of those things. So Montessori says, if we're going to prepare the environment, what she says is that it's very much like early childhood, and that we really have to have something totally different than what we think about as far as curriculum and subjects. That's a new way of looking at things. You know, when we schedule our time for middle school, especially, we don't schedule it by subjects. We don't go to math class or language class. They're all integrated. So we have by kinds of work. So there is a individual work time, and there is a group work time. And there's each of them are half a day. So they're large blocks based on blocks of kinds of work versus content work, which is a whole different way of thinking about things versus, you know, the subject. Even in our high school, there are always are what we call flex times for them to have blocks of independent work time, as well as getting the lessons and the activities they need to do. The role of the adult, I think, is they have to have a love of learning. And they need to model that, because what we teach our students today, I mean, they say human knowledge is going to double on a daily basis in the next 3 or 4 years. So content is going to be pretty irrelevant. It's how you're going to learn and that love of learning that's going to make the difference. They care and understand the adolescent. Part of the adolescent training is to do research projects. And one of the things we ask large groups of adolescents in our Montessori middle schools is, what was the most important characteristic of a teacher? And it was someone who cared. It had nothing to do with content. They wanted somebody who cared about them and understood them. You need to be friendly, but not their friend. Right? You are the adult, and you need to maintain that space where you're not caught up to be their peer or their friend. And sometimes that can be difficult. But you need to maintain that boundary. You need to be a guide. Guide meaning that you can't hold all the knowledge, but you should know where the resources are or the place to lead them to find the information. You should know the framework in order to help them know where to go. But there's no way anybody can know all the information today. And you need to provide the supportive community, which is the prepared environment. Montessori says the teacher must have the greatest respect for the young personality, realizing that in the soul of the adolescent, great values are hidden, and that in the minds of these boys and girls, there lies all hope of future progress and the judgment of ourselves and our times. The intimate vocation of people is the secret of the adolescent. Both of my daughters are Montessori middle school teachers. They both worked in the middle school, and now they're actually the high school teachers. So they teach the math and sciences. One is a ocean engineer, and the other one is an architect. They did that for quite a few years after going through Montessori, first 14 years, and then went off and did that, and then came back and took training from their mother, and all of a sudden I was okay. And so now they are... they teach, and actually both of them are making presentations at the conference. Okay, the School of the Woods story, you know. The school was founded as a Montessori school in 1964. The middle school is 23 years old, and it began in the foyer of the Fine Arts Building. So we have a lovely building, but I deserve it because I've been through several ones that have not been so good. So we grew rapidly. And then 13 years ago, we started the middle school teacher education program. And then 7 years ago, we added our high school. And then we added the high school teacher education program. And then we now are hoping to, we've bought land, 5 acres that is catty-corner to the school. And we've designed a LEED certified high school building. that we hope to move into, not this next school year, but the following. It's an 11-month project. So because it's environmentally friendly, we're hoping we'll have some funding. The physical environment, the word air kinder, many people think means that you have to have a farm. But air means, for the adolescent, means the physical space where adolescents live their lives. Okay, and then kinder means children. And there needs to be a variety of physical environments, a classroom, a community, a land lab, actually the whole world. This is School of the Woods, our sign. This is our middle school building. It was designed by the students. They wanted a lot of glass. It goes up so that they can sit in the community area and actually see the tall pines. They actually need psychological space as well as physical space. And then all the furniture is not school furniture, but they wanted office furniture because it was a place of work. So this is our kitchen area. The good thing about having so many buildings is you learn your mistakes and you don't have to repeat them the next time. A separate kitchen doesn't work. So our kitchen is part of the classroom. It's a tool. It's what we do every day. But when you send four or five adolescents off to fix a salad with the knives, then they start, you know, doing a little other things with them. So anyway, so the space, you should be able to see everybody. You don't have to be there. You just have to have eye contact. This is the classroom space as far as the tables. One of the other things I learned is they don't sit well on the floor. As I said, they fold their legs, they unfold their legs. Because they've got these limbs that they're not used to knowing what to do with. And so they're really quite uncomfortable. So we use these back jacks so they have something to sit on that actually provides a little framework. We try to have fewer things so they can take care of it. And we make them responsible for the things they have. For instance, we have these carousels with the pins. Well, each group takes a carousel when they're working. But we expect all the pins to be back in there. And we look for them until we find them to put back in there. And it takes a lot of time at the beginning, you know, because we're used to putting it down and getting another one. You know, our society is sort of a disposable society. But we try really hard to say, this is what we have, and we need to keep it, and we need to take care of it. We have banks of computers in at this level, and we have our high school students have individual laptops that they use. The high school, this is our new high school, actually, the plan. It has a central area, all natural lighting, and every classroom, like science, would have two classrooms with a lab in between and an outdoor environment. And so it's based for on 130, 150 students. It has a gym, so this is our community meeting space. Okay, so what is it that adolescents really need? I've come up with three focuses. One is adolescents need activities that encourage exploration of oneself and their place in the world. That's self-construction. They need opportunities to work and live in a trusting community that fosters deep connections with others, not superficial. And adolescents need a curriculum that demonstrates the interdisciplinary nature of the world and prepares them to understand and solve today's and future challenges. For me, those are the three areas that I think we need to focus on when we create a program. So activities that help them in their exploration of oneself is personal reflection, creative endeavors, electives, Socratic dialogue, service learning, career education, cultural exchanges, field studies, and businesses. So I have just a lot of pictures about that. This is a high school student actually doing personal reflection. Yoga classes as part of PE, sports, gardening. This is a track team that we have, volleyball team. This is one of the electives of carpentry. So they make the things for the classroom, the podium. We put a piece between two large tables. And so they designed it and actually made it. The boys wanted a sewing class. So they made boxer shorts and had a fashion show. Guitar. Art projects. This is a salad bar business that we have. We have classroom businesses, and so they have to earn a certain amount of money during the year to go on their adventure trip. A fourth of it is earned by the class business. A fourth has to be earned by them personally, and a half their parents can pay, but no more than that. This is in Monterrey, Mexico, and there's a group of people here from there, an exchange program. So our students go there and live with their families, and their students come back and live with our families. And in high school, we do that in Santiago, Chile. Then we also have a Montessori school in Panama that we work with, and we go in January because that's their summer vacation, but they do their service projects in the summer because it's drier and cooler. And so our kids go there and go into the rainforest and actually put a village together. They do all the carpentry and the gardening and take medical supplies and school supplies and everything for several weeks. This is a mission that we have close to the school that we work with. We also have a food pantry few feet from our back door that our students work with. This is a classroom internship, so the students go back and work in the classrooms, ideally in classrooms that they had been in when they were younger, and see it from another perspective. And it's really funny because they'll say, well, it's so much smaller, you know. You know, and of course they know that it didn't change size, but the perception is totally different. Well, this work is pretty easy. Why aren't they getting their work done, you know? And I said, well, did you always get your work done? Well, you know, but seeing that from that other perspective helps. This is working in businesses, and working in the businesses, I think, is positive for the business community as well as the adolescent itself, because adolescents, people don't want them. I mean, you know, when we go to do it at first, oh my goodness, you know. But we have enough businesses that we've used over and over again, and our kids are wonderful. But they have to, you know, be nice to people who might not be nice to them. They have to refold that blouse that they had just folded and somebody came along and undid. You know, they have to listen to instructions. You know, nobody's going to repeat them two or three times. Have to pay attention. So they really begin to see it, the importance of the communication, and really, I think, find out how skillful they really are. On turn, the people in the businesses always say, I'll hire them. They're better than the people I'm paying. You know, they come on time, they're polite, they have to write a resume and everything beforehand. They're impressed with that. And so this is working in a hardware store and a pottery. This is working in the court systems. SPCA, this is Habitats for Humanity. Allison's also need an opportunity to work and live in a trusting community that fosters deep connections with others. We use a process called CPIR, which is Sonny and Jim McFarland came up with, and we use as part of our peace education. But we first establish a climate, and then we work at process. You know, what are the processes in your classroom, the ground rules to make it work? Then how do they create their identity, and how are those relationships? And so it's different in the middle school and the high school. We spend the first 2 weeks of middle school just doing what we call orientation, to set the climate and let everybody understand the process of how to work in the classroom. And then the others are built in. In the high school, we actually spend the first week in a retreat, and they write the high school handbook. And so they have to go through all the processes of all of our accrediting agency, because we're accredited by the state, by AMS, and by SACS. And so they all have different rules. And so they have to go through the rules, because one of them requires a weapons policy and another one requires something else, and put all of it together. So then they have to get agreement among themselves. That's where the work is. And then they present it to the faculty, and then we give them any feedback. And once we've done that, they go to our board of trustees and make the presentation, and they get lawyer language. And then they present it to their parents by the end of September. And by the time they've been through the process, they own all of that. You know, they understand why it's there. And we have very little difficulty with our kids following the rules. I mean, they're normal kids, and they do their things. But, you know, but they'll always say, well, who made that rule? And, you know, if you don't like it, put it in the book, and next year we'll revisit it. But it stays now, you know, so... We have community meeting at all levels of our school, circle time, group time, whatever. And, of course, it's run by the students. I think it's very important, and actually we feel it's important to do it at the beginning of the day, because adolescents are going to come in and talk. You know, it doesn't matter what your agenda is. And so if you gather them every morning and let them talk and share, then it makes the community much more inclusive versus getting in little groups and talking or doing it during math class or whatever. They have to create common goals and missions. We do a lot of peer teaching, multiple levels, throughout the school and with each other. And then we have collaborative groups. And our collaborative groups are picked out of a hat for a 5-week cycle. So that group of four people have to do science project, math project, lead community meeting, all sorts of things. By the end of that 6 weeks, they really know how to work with each other. Now, it hasn't always been smooth sailing in between, but they have to learn to work it out. That's much more depth than some of the other kinds of ways that you can do it. And then we live out on the land every 6 weeks. So a community is a group of people coming together to achieve mutual goals and satisfaction in a spirit of peace and harmony. So here's community meeting. And this is getting a lesson at community meeting. These are collaborative games that we do the first 2 weeks for them to get to work. And then when we go out to the ropes course, we do a lot of what they call low elements, where it takes 2 hours to do a project and work it out, but it all focuses on one element of teamwork. This is one of them. We have to get everybody over that wall. But, of course, they forget about the last person, how they're going to get there. So that one teaches planning ahead and goal setting. Now they do what we call high ropes, and the high ropes are individual challenges. One of the things we know about adolescents is they're risk takers. And that actually now is found to be a brain function of too much or too little dopamine. And so if you don't provide high-level stimulating activities, they will find it on their own. And many times those are life-threatening. And so we need to keep not passive but very active activities for them. So they love this stuff. But what I like about it is that they have to plan their goal. Everybody supports them, whatever their goal is, to accomplish it. So this is another activity, MoPole. So you climb this 30-foot pole, and then you figure out how to stand up there, and then you jump to the trapeze that's out there. So anyway, it has multiple steps. So you have to, there's a ladder at the bottom, so they declare what their goal is. I'm going to go to the top of the ladder, wave to everybody, and come back down. Or I'm going to climb up there and sit. Or I'm going to stand up there and then get down, or I'm going to jump. It really doesn't matter what the goal is, but it's very concrete. And then everybody supports them. We say, how do you need to be supported? Some people want everybody to cheer and clap and carry on. Some people want it absolutely silent. Other people want one or two people to work to help them through it. But how they need to be supported here is a really big clue as how they need to be supported in the classroom. If I say to somebody, how can I help you with your history? Well, I don't know. But when you get here, you know. And then you transfer some of that. And everybody is supportive of each other. The teachers come back after that knowing how to support the students, and the students know how to support each other. It's a wonderful experience. And the students actually say it changes their life, I mean, as far as the experience. We do it the third week of school. We do 2 weeks of orientation, and then we do that the third week, and then we're ready to work on academics. And you might say, oh, how can you waste that much time? But the thing is, the learning is so efficient after you've been through this process. You have to take the time to do this. If you take the time to do it, then you know, everybody's ready to work and learn and knows how to work with each other. So it's really a huge time saver. This is some of our adventure trip of rock climbing. This is a group of students who had just finished the handbook. These are some of the mission statements they write. The mission of the Woods Middle School is to create a learning environment and participate in a variety of activities where we respect all things, trust and care for ourselves and others, To learn about ourselves and act with self-confidence, and to communicate with people and socialize with peers, and to prepare ourselves for our future. So about 6 weeks in, then we write the class mission statement. They do their own mission statement, and every other year we do Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teens, and that's part of the work there. The other year we do the Heroic Journey, and Mary and Chandon are here, and they're doing a workshop on that. One for the high school is that we, the people of Woods High School, are the future of higher Montessori learning and excellence. We are individuals from different backgrounds coming together to learn from each other. Our purpose is to strengthen our education while gaining important life skills. We value love, respect, and unity. At the same time, we have fun. We are striving to meet our full potential in everything we do in order to achieve greatness. Peer teaching, having fun, and then land lab experience. We go away for 1 week every 6 weeks. We have 48 students and 4 teachers. We go an hour away from home. It's integration of all the disciplines, and we try to walk or talk as far as ecology. And there's a renewal and reflection opportunity. Montessori talks a lot about stopping and just reflecting. You know, she says you don't need a vacation, you just need a change in pace. What we're doing is providing that change in pace, because most of us live in a pretty fast-paced world, have to go here and there and on the freeway, and this, we slow down. So we have 3 goals. One is global understanding of sustainability in order to be stewards of the land, to understand the concept of sustainability from participation and Socratic dialogue, to take the elementary curriculum and put it in action with basic needs and then economy, so we relive the fundamental needs of people. We practice recycle and reuse. Just going out there with 48 students and buying food and how the packaging of that is. I mean, you can buy nice little individual packages to look at the trash that you've got, or you can buy bigger quantities that are not separately packaged, you know. So there's a lot of dialogue in how to do that. We also want an independent micro-community connected with nature. So when we go out there, the students manage all the activities. They do all the cooking, all the cleaning, all the projects. They have real meaningful work with delayed gratification. One of the things is we live in this instant gratification world. And when we go out there, we have a project that we take all year to do. So they work on it for a week, and then it's 6 weeks. And they work on it a week, and 6 weeks. So they have, and then it's really awesome what they have at the end. But they have, you know, have to come back and think about it, maybe do some research, figure out what to do. They're connected to the classroom studies, most of our project. There's a change in pace and renewal for students as well as adults. So we're hoping, you know, when the adults do this, they also get some downtime. And there's appropriate distance for home, so it's not too close that they, you can run back to the school, but it's not too far away if someone was not was sick or had a problem. And then we're also looking at the rhythms of nature and adolescence. We try to return to the same place. If you go to a different place every time, then it takes a while to acclimate to that place, and you don't get the full benefit of the time. So, you know, the first time it may take a day or so for everybody to be acclimated. By the time you go the third or fourth time, I mean, it takes an hour, and they're kind of like their space, and they're able to do it. Also seeing the various seasons each time you went from the same place. We do, like, astronomy at night. Can't do that when in the classroom very well. We try to find a healthy, calming, natural environment that is not camping. Our land lab, first one I thought, well, we'll just camp out there. Well, we consumed all our time in our basic needs, and we weren't able to do the other things. And then I thought, oh, this isn't great for the adventure trip, but this is not what we're looking for as our change in pace every week. So we have, you know, something where you don't have to cook your meals outside all the time and those kinds of things. We have no electronics, and that's a big deal. No TV, no CDs, no any of that. And at first, it's pretty boring because, you know, they're used to being entertained by these things. but they have to leave them behind. After a while, they play board games and they find, you know, other ways to have fun. And we honor the adolescent sleep cycle, which research says is 2 hours delayed. And so we get up later and we actually go to bed later. That's get all the astronomy in anyway. And, you know, I mean, when you're out there, they work hard, so they're sound asleep when they go to sleep, so it's great. And the schedule of the day, there's for a routine, because adolescents need a routine, but we have the flexibility of responding to whatever. One of the things that we do out there is that because we don't change classes, we save about an hour and a half a day, which is 1 week every 6 weeks. So we put exactly the same minutes per subject that everybody else does to get, you know, the credits, except we just use our time differently. And so it doesn't matter what they're working on out there because not everybody has to do the same thing or be accountable in the same way. So this is the land lab. Actually, we're just this year moving to another one, but this is the one we had before, which was 10 years ago. And we started camping and building it. And then, of course, we had to build our own outhouse and collect our own water, those basic needs. And then we had to build a shower. We built an outdoor shower. And, of course, when you're working here in Houston, and you're an adolescent for sure, you know, a shower is not a want, but a need. And then we started building a house. It took us over 3 years. And these actually are bunk beds. But the group that did bunk beds, they took a whole week to do a prototype of a bunk bed. And, you know, then they came back and they were going through the newspapers and they were looking through and I said, what are you doing? Well, it's got to be worth a lot of money. It's got a ladder, it's got this and it's got that. You know, they were trying to find out how much it would cost. And then the rest of the time they built 30 sets of them so that we could all sleep. The house is a straw bale house, so the external walls are made of bales of straw, which, of course, you can build many houses in one season from bales of straw versus a wood house, which would take many seasons for one. And there's the finished house with a garden. The inside, we recycle everything. So we get an old door, we make a table. The person who really owns the property, we don't own it, remodels houses. So she takes things out of houses and then we figure out what we're going to do with it in the process. We built a Native American sweat lodge. We built a greenhouse. And, you know, that was my project. Even to do the flooring and to square it up, we must have done Pythagoras' theorem 1,000 times. You know, so they really know why you need to do that. You know, these PVC pipes, I mean, when you fuse them together, they're a done deal. So the accuracy is one of the tendencies. I mean, you really have to measure because if you make a mistake, it takes a long time to fix it. We made a solar fountain, a pond with a solar fountain. We did fences. Those people know about geometry that you'll need for the rest of your life. They also did beehives, and when they went to do the research on the beehives, they found out that in the corners of a rectangle that the bacteria collected. So they made theirs round, and they had no bacteria. They made a kind of a mushroom top. But we'd had quite a lot of learning in that because the first time we went and collected all the honey, we took it into the kitchen and we left it there. We didn't close the door. And the bees came back and took every bit of it back to the hive. Every bit of it. So, that was learning. A spiral rock garden. A tree house. Just kind of places to hang out. A butterfly garden. And then we did chickens. And, no, chickens. Chickens are pretty stupid. It took us many groups of chickens to grow them up because they kept sticking their head out and getting the head taken off. The kids wanted to sleep in the chicken coop with them to protect them and all sorts of things. But we found out you have to get indigenous chickens who know the prey because we were ordering chickens on the Internet. And they didn't know about the prey of that surrounding. So again, we learned. So we have ones that have grown up. And so here's our chicken coop. But we had, you know, you have to take the chicken wire and build way down because the possums and the raccoons. We had to put, you know, concrete things under the gate so they wouldn't dig underneath. But you know what now happens? They now climb that tree and jump in. So, and then we did gardens. We had to plant nitrogen-fixing plants because the soil wasn't fertile. We made these lovely rows. Everything died. And then what we then did is found out we had to do the contour of the land. So we made an A-frame with a plumb line, and we followed the contour of the land, and it, so it was a serpentine. And then we built a ditch, they call a swell, and the water would come down and then go in there, and we had done it just right. And Texas A&M came out with their multi-$1,000 machine, and it was great. But then when we got the chickens, we had to fence it in, and then we had too much water, and so we had to figure it out. But it's, you know, we have to pay attention, we have to observe, and then you have to respond. It's the perfect lesson that we want to have happen. So it never stays like it is. I mean, we always have to figure out and problem solve something else. This was a bread oven that we built, and now we have pizza and flatbread. This is the only machinery we use, but for adolescents, it's the next best thing to having a driver's license. And somebody had parked this, but it was for the part in the back. We do keep track of all the water we use and monitor that so that we only use a certain amount of water each time. So maybe less showers today, or, you know, figuring out how many times you have to flush that toilet, you know, and how much water is being used. So we're also part of the National Science, a GLOBE curriculum, which is National Science Association and NASA. And so we were building environments here, and then we were looking at it from an ant's point of view, a bird's point of view, an airplane's point of view, and a satellite's point of view. Because, of course, when it goes into the international data bank, which we have the protocols for, it's just a dot on a satellite dot. So, but it was perfect, seeing it, again, from lots of different perspectives. And then here's our porch. And so these are all the tables that we use for from old doors. And then once we got all of our basic needs met, then we started economy. So we raise, this is basil, and we make pesto sauce. We use, we give the organic garden goes to organic restaurants and to the soup kitchen. So I think that if you look at this quote, getting to peace, peace is a defining issue of our time. No more critical challenge faces each of us and all of us together than how to get along. How can we learn to live together and deal constructively with our deepest differences? The challenge exists on the smallest scale and on the largest. Never before in human evolution have people faced the challenge of living in a single community with billions of other beings. Most people do not know how to work with a group of six, never mind 60, 600, or 6 billion. Our kids really learn to work with a group, which is what we want for the future. The next area is curriculum that is interdisciplinary and helps prepare them for the future. So our curriculum is designed at the middle school and the high school to be interdisciplinary. We have a different use of structure and time. We implement the habits of mind. We implement technology. We use study guides for the three-period lesson. We have a multi-age grouping. We have an immersion of intersessions, intersession and immersion. So high school, it's intersessions. Change in pace. We do a variety of assessments, performance, self, portfolio, and written. And we have accommodate for differentiated learning. Some just examples of first period lesson. This is showing the difference between a virus and a bacterium. You know, the gross differences to set the framework for their own individually. We also use the mushroom pizza to show the different kinds of fungi. Because you've got your yeast, you've got your mold, and you've got your fungi, which is everything. And so, you know, of course, they're food-oriented because that's important at this age. That once you've done that, then they we use graphic organizers to take the notes. And so they come back after they've listened to the lesson and record the information. We use metaphors. Again, this is a new being able to think outside the box and not being so literal. So this can be... the top bun can be the introductory paragraph, the bottom bun, the conclusion paragraph, and the meat and cheese is the main information. And it's always fun to say when they give you a paper that doesn't have much research in it, is where's the meat and cheese? We use what we call mind maps, which is from Tony Bazan, which is used of the right and the left side of your brain. You can read a chapter in a book and have one visual picture, one mind map of everything in it. By the time you've created it, you've learned it because you've had to go deeper in, create icons that are meaningful to you, not necessarily to anybody else, that represent the information. So lots of second period kinds of work. We also have a baby called Baby Think It Over that's sitting up here that we use. So our eighth-year students are a parent for a week. And the baby is a 10-pound baby. They have computer chips in it, and it cries randomly day and night. It has to be fed with a bottle, has to be burped, has to have its diaper changed, etc. And so at the end, they're fully aware that they're not wanting to have this responsibility right now. And then we can check to see how they've done as a parent every day. If they don't do so well, they get some more practice. So. Using computers, we consider them just a tool in the classroom. This is the high school doing projects, individual work. And then for third period, there's lots of ways to show your knowledge. This is a student doing a monologue, a historical figure. This is robotics, so they have to have this thing that will work. So they do it actually, they design it, put it on the computer, and then actually test it out with the materials. We have a poetry reading that the students write their poetry. They choose ones that they want to present. And so their parents come and we have dessert, like a coffee house kind of thing, and they present their work. This is building a machine that will go a meter and catapult a wad of paper into a trash can for learning about complex machines. Making presentations, having independent studies, where they have passion for what they are interested in. As a senior, they actually write a senior thesis, and our students have done extraordinarily well with the senior thesis because what happens is they several universities have taken on their projects after they have done it. They've been equivalent to a master's degree or thesis. This is creating a very graphic cell. And so everything in there is a representation of the function of different parts of the cell. So how do you decide what to teach? We use Content Knowledge by ASCD, which is kind of a national curriculum to start from. We use New Standards by the University of Pittsburgh, which is more of a process-oriented. We use a book called Science Matters, which says there are 18 concepts that you have to know to be scientifically literate. And then we use state guidelines, if that's applicable, and then we use the Montessori perspective. And an example of how we go about that is that if we're going to do immigration, so we start with them, and we have to know the four waves of immigration. So we go back and say, okay, from the 9 to 12 curriculum, what is it that, why do people move? So let's do the migration chart. So that sets the world history type context. Then we do the four waves, and then we say, okay, now what are the issues with immigration, debates or whatever, you know, what does it affect today? And then after you've done that, we have them take a test to be a U.S. citizen, see if they could pass that. And then we say, okay, what are the skills that you need to know to be a world citizen? Very different ones. And then they have to make up a test for world citizenship. So it's not just American history. It's putting it in the context of world history and bringing it to current events and to a global perspective. And as Albert Einstein said, the mind that got us into this mess is not the mind that will get us out of it. Humanity needs a change of mind fostered by a change of heart.